This will be tape number one of Donnie Gator on the 24th of October, 1984, Peggy Bulger Collecting. We'll be speaking with Donnie at her home in St. Augustine.
Well, Donnie, for the record, would you say your name and your address?
Donnie Gator, 22 Davis Street, St. Augustine, Florida.
And where and when were you born?
I was born in a small village in the panhandle of Florida by the name of Darlington. It's north of Defuniak Springs.
And that's in Florida?
That's in Florida.
Kind of near the Alabama
line. It was near the Alabama line. Uh-huh.
And what's your birth date?
I was born March the 3rd, 1910.
And I know you're a housewife now. Were you always a housewife?
No. I worked in a textile plant for 19 years. And I worked in a locker plant in Jacksonville after I moved to Jacksonville from Alabama. I worked in a processing plant and a locker plant, and later on I was manager of that plant. The name of the place was Merchant's Coal Storage. It was where the Sears building is now.
And what ethnic background is your family? What country did they originally come from?
My father was Scotch-Irish, and his relatives came from the countries over there. I'm not sure where.
What about your mother?
My mother, I don't know much about her ancestors. She was a Dees by name, and my mother was had a beautiful, clear olive skin and real black hair and blue eyes. And all her family were of black hair, especially my grandfather. And I never did know. Now my daughter's doing a family. You're recording now?
Uh-huh.
My daughter is doing, Joyce, my daughter Joyce is doing a family tree now. And she's trying to find out the origin of my mother's side of the family.
Let me just see if this is recorded. Okay, so Darlington, Florida. Tell me about your family, first of all. Did you have brothers and sisters?
I had one sister, Eva. She was 6 years older than me. And, of course, she always looked after me going back and forth to school, because we always walked to school. And in Alabama, that's where I was raised. We had ditches, or gullies, they called up there. And when we'd have showers of rain, the ditches would fill with water, and I was always tempted to wade. And I would take off my shoes and wade the ditches as far as I could close to home, because I was not supposed to do that. And that was where I got my first schooling, was in Alabama. Now you ask me what you want me to say.
Okay. Well, you were talking about your mother and father. What were their names?
My father's name was Lloyd Cleveland Egerton, and my mother's name was Nancy Jane Johnson. And she was the oldest of 10 children, and he was the youngest of 10 children. So we had a lot of a large family, and we had a lot of cousins that came to live with us. And because back then the people had no pensions when they were left widows. Mm-hmm. And they would, since my mother and father only had two, and we had a fairly good living, they always had some of the cousins live with us, going to school for a semester or maybe more. Or if one got sick, they came to us and stayed until they were better and things like this. There was always somebody at our house. Besides that, my mother boarded school teachers, and they did take in other people, hunters from other states that came to our place. They boarded with us, and my father would show them around the best hunting grounds and things like that. And I had a very interesting life. I could go swimming when my chores were finished. We were right on a clear creek called Natural Bridge Creek. And we had a cotton gin and a grist mill where you ground the corn and a shingle mill where you made the shingles and a sawmill where you sawed the lumber and a country store. So it was a gathering place. And when our chores were done, and even at noontime, the young people in the community and the older ones too would all gather, and we went swimming and fishing and whatever until it was time to go back to work again. Now that was when school was not in session, but we always had fun. I was also baptized in that creek. There's about 12 or 13 of us, young people around 16 years old. And we were baptized in that creek, and the water was always cold. And it made the area cool because of the coolness of that stream of water. Mm-hmm. So it was a lovely place to grow up. We had a boat, just a flat boat with oars. You rowed your way around, and one of the school teachers that boarded with us, she liked to paint. She was an artist. And I'd row her up the creek, and she'd paint pictures, and I'd read a book, and then we'd have a picnic, and we'd cook out on the banks of the stream. And so we just had a lovely time.
Well, you said you had a grist mill and a sawmill. Is this what your father did for a living?
Yes. And he didn't own this. He operated it for Jack Zorn. The name of the community was Zorn's Mill Community, and he operated all this for Mr. Zorn.
How do you spell Zorn?
Z-O-R-N. And my father was, they had called him a jack of all trades because he could do anything, and he taught me a lot of the things that he did. I could operate the cotton gin and make the beds. I couldn't gin the bales of cotton, but I could make all the mattresses. And the whole area was made at that cotton gin because it came out in layers just like batting that you buy today. And you'd put the ticking down on the floor right under where the cotton came out. And then you'd layer it until it was smooth and even. And then you'd stop the gin, move that one out, and start on another one. And I could gin the cotton for the beds and make those if my father was not around. And he operated the sawmill and the shingle mill, then that was off limits for me. But the grist mill was operated by water, and it ground the corn into meal, and it was ground according to the way the customer liked it. If he wanted fine meal, you put the rocks close together. And if he wanted coarser meal, why, you raised the rocks a little bit so I could operate the mill, take the toll, keep the names on the bags, and see that the people were pleased, and I enjoyed meeting the people.
Was it corn that you were
growing? It was corn. And then that was my first landscape job. They built a new portion of the dam to dam up the water, and the soil looked so nice. I always like to see things grow, so I asked my father if I could landscape it. And he said, "What do you want to do that for? It's a lot of work." And I said, "But it looks so pretty when the grass and the flowers reflect on the water." So he said, "Go ahead." So I set Bermuda grass all on the banks, which helped to hold the soil. And then I planted canna lilies all on the banks. And they grew like wild because they had all the moisture they needed and everything. In a little while, it was very pretty. And in the autumn, when the leaves turned, we had a definite changing of colors in southern Alabama, just farther up in Georgia. So it was a beautiful place.
Mm-hmm. Well, did What was the name of the creek where all these mills were?
Natural Bridges. Natural Bridges. And it did have a natural bridge. The highway crossed it, and at one time a railroad crossed it. And there was a deep swimming hole there that was a little north of the mill where this natural bridge was. And it was formed by clear lime springs, and the water was always nice to drink and to swim in. And you could see the fish swimming all in. It was so clear. And pretty pebbles on the bottom. It was real nice.
Well, I know you're a great cook. Did you learn how to cook from your mother?
I learned how from my mother.
Uh-huh. How'd she learn how to cook?
I suppose she learned from her mother. I guess it was handed down because people said she is the best cook in the country. And she had special ways of taking care of things that most people didn't go to the trouble to, because she was very particular about the things that she used for milk. We milked the cows, and she taught me how to milk and how to take care of the milk and the butter so that it was always good. But when we'd visit some other families, my father would remark, when he was back home, of course, that he couldn't drink the milk because it tasted and smelled so bad, he just couldn't drink it. So she didn't use the utensils for anything except milk. When she milked the cow and strained that, it was all put into sterilized containers, glass or crockery or enamel. She didn't use aluminum or tin or anything like that. And, of course, glass pitchers and things like that she used for the milk. And when that milk is sweet twice and it's sour twice. And she'd churn the milk after it clabbered and then make butter. That butter was also sweet. It was never sour or had an off flavor or color to it. So it took special handling and a lot of time to take care of just the milk and butter. And she was that way about everything she prepared. So I learned a lot about preparing, gathering vegetables and getting them fresh from the garden to the table. And very particular about how she looked greens and washed them so many times that they did not have any grit or bugs or anything left on them, so that they were always delicious. And she was, as everybody said, a wonderful cook.
What was her particular specialties?
Vegetables, mm-hmm. And cobbler pies, mm-hmm. And she made the most delicious chicken and dumplings, and she made chicken pies and ham pies. She could take a little bit of whatever she had and make it into enough to feed a big crowd. And we always had plenty of homemade sausage, mm-hmm. Home smoked meat, hams and sides, and always put away enough to last us usually for a year. And then in the cold weather, somebody would in the community would butcher, they called it a yearling. It was a small beef. They divided among the neighborhood because we didn't have refrigeration and curing facilities then for curing the beef. But we waited for the cold weather to slaughter the hogs. And then that was on the coldest days, the neighbors would come in to help. And then in turn, we helped the other neighbors. And before daylight in the morning, the pots of water was already boiling. And as soon as it was light enough to see, the hogs were slaughtered and scalded, and the hair was pulled from the hogs. And then they were scraped and washed down until they were clean. And then the entrails were removed, and the hogs hang out in the open. And by later in the day, they were firm enough that they could separate the shoulders, the hams, and the sides from each other. And these particular parts made, of course, the names of, we didn't cut pork chops then, we had backbone. And the haslet, which my mother always cooked on the day that it was slaughtered. She'd take the haslet, which was the liver, and cook that with some of the backbone. Then they'd separate the ribs from the sides. And they'd take some of the ribs and fry them for lunch. We called it dinner because that was our main meal. Bake sweet potatoes and cook collard greens and fry those ribs. And she usually had pies or cobblers or something made ahead of time. And it was more or less a social gathering as well as work. So we all enjoyed that.
When would that be? Around what time of year would that be?
In November's when we had our coldest, first spells, you know. We might kill one shoat before the regular butching time just to have the freshes, we call them. But then that was the main time was when the first main cold spell came, which was usually about November.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're getting towards that time now. Can you tell me, what did your family do for Thanksgiving?
Well, we always had the family gathering, and we always had sweet potato and pumpkin pies. And if we didn't have a turkey, we had a chicken hen. But we liked the turkey, but didn't always have it because we didn't always raise the turkeys. Turkeys were harder to raise than chickens for some reason. If a turkey was outside and it came a shower of rain, he'd stand right there and hold his head up and drown. So you had to have somebody always on the lookout, and they'd stray way off in the fields, and maybe if a cloud came up, you couldn't reach them time enough to save them, you know. So you didn't always protect the turkeys right at the proper time. So we didn't always have the turkey, because what you didn't raise, you didn't have. But we always saved enough. If we didn't gather enough peas and can them, and butter beans and things like that, then we'd use the dry ones and store them away for the winter. We always also raised peanuts, and we had peanuts all during the year. Mm-hmm. And when the young people had gatherings, we had what we called parched peanuts. We didn't say roasted peanuts. We said parched peanuts. It's all the same thing.
Did you boil them?
Oh, we had peanut boilings when they first came in, when they were green. You know, we loved to have peanut boilings. That was also an excuse for a gathering and fun games and just to have a good time. We had an organ. My father bought an organ for me, and it was the old Bellus, our pump type. And I'd keep time with my feet while I pumped the organ, and he played the violin. We didn't either one know a note of music, but we played and had a good time, and everybody would sing songs, and we had a good time.
Well, how did, when you got the organ, you just learned by ear?
Ear, always played by ear. And of all the songs I've always heard, I still remember each one by ear, just to hear the few notes, and I recognized what it was. Uh-huh. And it was a talent, I guess, that was given. A God-given talent, I always said.
And from your father, too, I guess.
I inherited that.
Learned how to play the fiddle?
Yes, by ear.
Yeah. Did he ever play for dances or anything like
no,
that?
No, he didn't. It was mostly gospel.
Oh, yeah.
It was mostly gospel where I was raised, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And later on, we liked to go to dances, but they didn't like for us to go. But after we were married, we went anyway. Because we always felt like that we missed something if we didn't go dancing, because I like to dance.
What church were you raised in?
Methodist. Uh-huh. But I'm now Catholic.
Huh? Well, we're going to get back to the music part, but I want to go just through your history a little bit more. So you were you spent your early childhood in the Panhandle in southern Alabama. Where else did you move when you were a teenager?
I went to Lakewood. My folks boarded me. We didn't have a high school where I lived. Elementary, two-room school. And then they sent me to Lakewood for 2 years for
Lakewood,
high school. Lakewood, Florida. That's the highest point in the state of Florida.
Oh, yeah.
And I have a picture of the old school building.
It was a boarding school?
No, I boarded with relatives. It was a sawmill town, and we had relatives that lived there. And they boarded me with aunts and uncles.
To go through high school?
Go through that school.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And then what happened after school?
Then I was married.
Who'd you marry?
I married Warren Godwin, the father of my three children. And the two oldest ones also went to that same school that I had gone to at Lakewood.
Is that where you settled when you got married in Lakewood?
Well, we lived there for a while. And I lived in South Carolina for a while. And then back to Florala. Then to a community outside Florala called Chapel Hill, and that's where my son was born. And we still did farming, and I worked in the textile plant, a shirt factory that was nearby.
Where was that?
Florala.
Oh, in Florala.
Uh-huh. Florala was right on the line, and the lake was half in Florida and half in Alabama, so that's why they took the first part from Florida and the other from Alabama, named it Florala. A nice little town.
And your husband was a farmer? Or?
Well, he was a truck driver.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, we liked the rural area. I always loved the country. And we lived in the rural area most of the time. And then from there, we moved to Jacksonville because my sister and her husband came here and to Jacksonville. And there's more work there for the menfolk. Well, for all of us as far as that, and that's when I went to work in the processing and locker plant.
And how old were you when you moved to Jacksonville?
Well, it was in 1945, so I was 35.
And your three children had already been born then?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. They were all in school by the time I moved to Jacksonville.
Uh-huh. And did you stay there?
We lived there several years. I remarried George DuPont from this area at that time, and we built a home on Bedford Road, and we lived there. He was a railroad man, and then he inherited property here in St. Augustine, and we moved to DuPont Center, where he owned the property, and later...
Where's that?
DuPont Center is 10 miles south of here on U.S. 1.
Oh, okay. And he owned property there.
And he owned a property there, and we had a fun time there because it was a rural area, and he had hunting dogs, and he liked to hunt. And I also went with him on hunting trips. We caught wild hogs. He had hunting dogs that would get the attention of the hogs. He'd catch them with his hands and tie them with a short length of rope.
Uh-huh.
Then I'd help him load them in the Jeep.
Oh.
And we'd take them to the pens and put them in pens where they were neutered and fed and dewormed. And they made the best eating you ever ate if it was taken care of properly.
Hmm.
And then he deer hunted, and we put away venison. And we had a variety of pork and sausage and beef and venison. And we lived great. And we also raised sugar cane and put up the mill and bought an old Model A or Model T from the Sanchez family. Instead of having to drive a tractor around and around, we used that old car, which my son-in-law, Ray Langston, fixed up so it would work and grind the cane, and we'd put it in that boiler and skim it until it was good syrup and take it off. So we lived in a land of plenty. Then we went fishing. My husband liked to throw the net and catch the mullet.
What kind of net?
It was a regular fish net. Now, you know, they make a shrimp net here, but it has a smaller weave, and the mullet net is a larger weave. And the men would go on the beach. When somebody would call and say, the mullet's on the beach, we all went to the beach. And we'd take our iron skillets and the old coffee pot and have the grits and the fish and just have a great time. And that
just
was
right
on the beach. It was just a lovely thing.
Well, the net, it wasn't a cast net.
It is a cast net.
Oh, it is a cast net. Oh, okay.
It was not long like a seine. Now, you know, the seine is long where it takes a lot of people to operate. But this mullet net is a cast net that you just throw it in a circle if you're good at it,
yeah,
like he was, and catch all the fish in a few minutes that you wanted.
Well, Well, Mr. DuPont, what nationality is his family?
French.
French, uh-huh.
They called them Menorcans because they were raised here and married in to the Menorcan family. And a lot of them today, he had a sister married a Capot. Uh-huh. And they were Menorcans, you know. And several of the family married, another sister married Michler. And, they all intermarried into the Menorcan family. So my husband's family was all called Menorcans, too, because they were all mixed up.
Is that when you learned how to cook Menorcan?
That's when I learned to cook Menorcan, was in watching his family, his sisters, prepare the Menorcan food, and I learned it from them.
Well, what years were you married to him? Do you remember...
I was married in 1949, and he lived till 1969.
And so really, then you...
20 years.
Mm-hmm. And did you always live down in DuPont Center?
No, after we lived there a while, we built a place up on a dirt road 1 mile north of DuPont Center and sold the place down there. It was kind of noisy around that corner. There's two filling stations there, and it was kind of noisy. So we moved up on this little dirt road, on Daddle Pepper Road, and built another place.
It was called Daddle Pepper Road?
Yeah, but we named it because we raised a lot of daddle peppers, and the little dirt road was kind of hard to locate where we live. And there was a big Bahama sign right at this little dirt road on US 1. So we had tell repairmen that we asked to come out to fix certain appliances and relatives who visited us and friends. And we'd say we live right behind that Bahama sign. So they thought we lived in the woods in a tent or something out there. They'd laugh and tease us about it. Said, hey, we looked behind that sign for you. We didn't find you. So I kept after the commissioners, and Mr. Lovett was our commissioner at that time. So I lobbied the commissioners until I got them to name it. I asked them to either name it Plum Nelly or Daddle Pepper Road, because there was not a name, there was not a street or a road named Daddle Pepper. And since it was such a popular item, I thought it should have a name or something named for it. So they named it Daddle Pepper Road for us.
Well, can you tell me for the tape what a daddle pepper is and what the history of that is?
It's a very hot, light green pod that grows on a bush, say 3 or 4 feet tall usually, but they have been taller than I am, which is over 5 feet. And it's used for many seasonings in the food in this area. And there's members of my family that'll just bite that pot of hot pepper and leave the stem, you know, but it's awfully hot, so we make it into different items. I make just the pickle peppers in vinegar, put salt and vinegar in the jars, remove the stems, and then I make the daddle pepper jelly, daddle pepper relish, and the hot sauce, and we use it fresh, like I say, in so many different ways for seasonings. And depending on, now if you're going to season something that's going to be children, you use very little. But the old-timers, they like for you to heat it up, you know. So it depends.
Well, had you ever heard of daddle peppers before you came to San Jose?
Not until I moved to Jacksonville. People raised it in that area.
Uh-huh.
But more in this area than any area I've ever seen.
Where does it come from?
The island of Menorca. They brought the Menorcans brought the seed when they came to New Smyrna. You know, they originally came here with Mr. Turnbull, or Dr. Turnbull, to New Smyrna. And then when they migrated on up to St. Augustine, they brought the pepper with them.
That's great. Well, what was I going to say? So, when you moved then, when did you move where you are now, or have you moved around since then?
I had to sell we called it a mini farm then.
Uh-huh.
We had cows, and I had a milk cow, a little Jersey, and my husband owned a horse,
uh-huh,
and hunting dogs, and two cats. Uh-huh. which would catch squirrels, birds, rabbits, what have you. They were good hunters. And, of course, where you have feed, it's a good idea to have good hunting cats. And it was too much for me after my husband passed away. So I started looking for a place in town. And that I found this little place in 1973, and we remodeled it. Frank and I were married in 1973.
And what's Frank's last name?
Gator.
Frank Gator. How'd you meet Frank?
I was looking for a house to buy in town, and he had this old house, and it was a dilapidated old building. Uh-huh. And I just came in and looked and decided I didn't want it. At that time, I was working at a florist here, the Posey Palace. I worked there for about 3 years. And after I came in and looked at the house, he came up to where I worked. And I told him I decided I didn't want the house. And he said, well, I didn't want to talk about the house anyway. So we started dating, and that was the love of it.